my privilege now to introduce our main speaker tonight, Michael Jake from Santa Maria.
I'm Michael. I'm an alcoholic.
Michael.
I want to thank you guys for inviting me here tonight to speak. I want to thank Shane for coming along with me. Man, I didn't realize this was going to be almost a full hour pitch. What happened to the seventh tradition and the promises and all that other stuff that we normally do before a meeting? My sobriety date is October 6, 2003. I just celebrated 10 years of sobriety, which I never thought was possible. I couldn't put 10 hours together at one time. When I first got here, I just wanted the insanity to stop in my life. I wanted off the merry-go-round. You know, and I'm sure all of you have experienced that. Go out and do what we do, and you feel the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, and the day progresses and you start to feel a little bit better, maybe around 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, you get your second wind, and then you think to yourself, well, you know what, I can have one tonight, no big deal. And the next thing you know, you're off to the races again, and you're waking up the next morning, if you even slept, and you say to yourself, I did it again. And I just wanted that insanity to stop. You know, I thought there was something mentally wrong with me. You know, I thought eventually they're going to have to lock me up. You know, the behavior, the thoughts, it was just absolute insanity. And thank you to Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't have to live that way today. You know, my life is 180 from what it used to be. Shane, there's so many things that you shared about that 99% of everything you shared, I 100% get, you know, and that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous. Before I came to AA, these thoughts would rattle around in my head, and I never got to voice them to anybody. I never got to tell anybody what I was thinking or what I was feeling. And I came into AA, and people started to share what I was thinking, and I thought to myself, wow, you know, maybe there's some hope for me, you know. Maybe things could be different. And life started to change. I'm originally from back east, northeastern Pennsylvania. Grew up in a good home. Mother and father, you know, didn't drink. I've never seen my father put a drink to his lips. My mother, I saw her have a beer every now and then. So, you know, it wasn't a problem growing up. There's some alcoholism and drug addiction on my mother's side of the family. It's funny, me and Tom were talking about it before the meeting, all the bad things in the bloodline I've gotten, man, you know. Alcoholism, drug addiction, diabetes, bald, you know, all the stuff that that you don't want to end up with, I ended up with. And, you know, when I first realized I was an alcoholic and a drug addict, it was like, why me, you know? And the longer I stay sober, why not me, you know? Why not me? You know, maybe God has chosen me to carry the message to somebody to help save their life, you know? And it may have been 10 years ago when I got sober, it may be 10 years from now, I don't know, you know? But I truly believe that God has given alcoholics a purpose in life, to help each other, because no one else can help us but alcoholics. So anyhow, I was born back east, good family. My father owned a business. I worked for him growing up. You know, I basically had it made. You know, I graduated high school. I expected to take my father's business. It didn't turn out that way. They ended up selling the business. I went to work for a Ford dealership back east, and they had an opportunity up near Fresno to open a dealership, and they asked me and two service technicians if we wanted to move with them, and I was in the throes of alcoholism like you could not imagine. You know, it was every night of the week, numb, just absolutely numb. I can remember pulling into work in the morning, just that hungover, numb feeling, driving over the curb, and it was just like, oh, God, do I feel shitty. And so they came to me and said, hey, you want to go to California? And I thought, hell yeah, man. Sun, sand, and women, bring it. You know, and then I started to think to myself, I can go to California and I can die out there and I'll be far away from my family and it won't hurt them as bad. You know, no one will know me out there. I could just go out, do my thing, and I can just kill myself. And then the next thought was, well, maybe I can go out there and clean my life up. And we packed up a Ryder van, me and one guy, and we moved out here and we made it as far as Oklahoma. And I packed a pipe with me and I had a little bit of weed for the trip. God forbid I couldn't leave the house without it. I made it as far as Oklahoma and we went into a Pizza Hut. We had lunch and we got in the Ryder van and we pull out and we're going a few miles down the road and I said, are you ready? For what? I said, I brought a pipe. And he was my running partner back east. And you know, we got stoned going down the road, and it was like, man, I swore to myself I wasn't going to do this. And and we pulled into California, and the first night we were in California, got so drunk driving a company car from the dealership, how I didn't wreck that car that night, and you know, was off to the races again. You know, I was in town 2 weeks. I found the people I needed to find to do the things I like to do. And it was like, how did I get here again? You know, how did I end up here again? You know, I thought I left all those people back east. And once again, waking up with that pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. You know, you piece of shit, you did it again. And that went on and on and on. And I'll never forget. My drug of choice was cocaine, and I did mounds of cocaine one night, and I went to work the next morning, and my head was swollen. My sinuses were swollen from doing so much coke, and I remember my manager saying to me, are you all right? And I said, yeah, why? He said, your head's swollen. Well, the guy that I worked with and moved out here with me, he was my running partner, man, and he's just like snickering in the background, and you know, it's like they're the things that we do to ourselves that we don't even realize we're doing, you know? You know, it's just absolutely crazy. When you're in the throes of your addiction, you just think it's normal living. You know, you just think that's what the other guy's doing. You know, why can't I do it? You know, 10 foot tall and bulletproof. You know, nothing's going to stop me. You know, and I went on and on. We moved into that town in November. After the new year, we started to see that the business was going south, and I had a cousin here in Santa Maria, and I'd come down on the weekends and visit him, and his neighbor was the sales manager at a dealership here in town, and he said, we're looking for someone in the service department. Are you interested in coming down? And so on the weekends when I would come down to visit, I'd, you know, hand out resumes at different dealerships around town, and I think in April or May, they called me and they, you know, said, are you interested in this job? And I said, hell yeah. And I moved down here. And once again, it was like, okay, I'm going to go down there. It's going to be a new start. I'm going to change my life. I'm going to quit doing those things I'm doing. You know, because I always thought my problem was the drugs. You know, it's got to be the drugs. And I never saw the problem as being the alcohol, but the alcohol was just the primer. You know, that's what got the party started. So I moved down here, and once again, I was here 2 weeks, found the people I needed to find, and it was on again. And I was here for 3 months, and I ended up getting a DUI up in Grover Beach. And luckily, I was still on a Pennsylvania license. The CHP never reported to the California DMV that I'd gotten a DUI, so nothing was ever reported to insurance, otherwise I would have lost the job that I had here. And at the time it was, wow, am I lucky. And now that I've Now that I've gotten sober, I look back on that and it's not luck. It was God working in my life when I didn't even realize there was a God working in my life, you know? Because I was born and raised Catholic, and it was pray to God when I needed God, you know? I like what Patrick says, you know, the pinch hitter, you know? I called on God when I needed him to come off the bench and give me a hand, man. You know, other than that, it was like, I got it, and I was running, you know? And I got that DUI, and I thought I was going to lose my job. I went into my boss, and I told him, and he said, don't say anything to anyone unless if something comes down the pike. He said, we'll keep you in place, and, you know, just keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, I hired a lawyer, and he took care of business, and nothing ever happened, and I kept going. And maybe about 3 months after that, he confronted me one day at work. Rumors started getting out, you know, that I liked to party, and he came up to me one day, and he said, hey, I hear you like to use cocaine. Is that true? And I said, no. I said, I used to do that back east. You know, I said, I've been down that road. I said, you know, it's not a part of me anymore. And he said, well, if you ever need help, come and let me know. And I walked away, and it was like, whew, man. And, you know, it was just the same thing over and over and over and over again. And they hired a guy at work, and he was sober, and I didn't realize that he was sober. And he saw what I was going through. And I asked him one day, I said, hey, you want to go for a beer? And he said, no, I'm an alcoholic. And I'm thinking, well, then why don't you want to go for a beer? You know? Like the thought of an alcoholic, I had no clue what an alcoholic was. And he said, I don't drink. And I said, all right. And time went on, and he saw what I was doing, and he saw how I was acting, and he said to me one day, you know, did you ever, you know, think of quitting? And I said, I'd love to quit, but I can't. And he said, did you ever think of doing it one day at a time? And that was like, that hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, you can do that? A day at a time? You can quit doing something? And he proceeded, he took me to my first meeting. There was another guy at work who was in Narcotics Anonymous. Because, you know, once again, I thought my only problem was drugs. Him and this other gentleman took me to my first meeting, and it was at St. Louis de Montfort. It was a Monday night meeting. And I went into that meeting not knowing what to expect. And I heard people sharing, you know, the things that I was thinking. I heard people sharing the things that I was doing. And I thought, you know, this just might work. And I left that meeting. During that meeting, a bunch of guys came up to me with a phone list, and they said, if you ever want to use, call us before you use, and if we have to go to Pappy's at 3 o'clock in the morning, we'll meet you at Pappy's and we'll talk. And I can remember walking away from that thinking, what the hell is meeting at Pappy's at 3 in the morning going to do to help me to stop drinking or using? Because I had no idea how this worked. I didn't realize that when I told you how I felt, it took the power away from it, and it relieved that obsession, you know? And I left that meeting that night, and I can remember I called my mother and told her what was up, and I said, you know, it was really good. I said, I'll probably go back maybe in a month or so. And, you know, not even, like, realizing the depth of it or the seriousness of it, you know, just thinking that I could just come once in a while and, you know, maybe still party a little on the side and do what I do. I want to back up a little bit. Before I went to that first meeting, I went to a psychiatrist, and I went to several before I came to my first meeting. And I sat in that meeting crying my eyes out, and I told that woman that I could no longer live the way I was living. You know, I'm going insane. And she said, it sounds to me like you're an alcoholic and a drug addict. She said, why don't you go to 9 meetings and don't come back to see me until you do that? And I walked out of there, and I thought to myself, crazy bitch, what's she talking about? You know, no alcoholic or drug addict. And I went home and I got loaded that night. You know, it's all I knew to do. And then I went to my first meeting, I think maybe a couple months after that, and then probably 6 months after that meeting with that psychiatrist, I ended up in rehab in Santa Barbara. And for the first time I admitted, you know, Michael, I'm a drug addict. And I thought to myself, huh, maybe that lady knew what she was talking about, you know? Normal people don't end up in 28-day drug rehabs. And And I still thought I was just a drug addict, and I sat in rehab for the first few weeks, and people identified that they're an alcoholic, and counselors were talking to me, are you an alcoholic? No, I'm just a drug addict. And the more I sat there and got sober and the fog started to lift, I realized I'm an alcoholic. You know, once I put anything in my body, it just ignites the fury. You know, I can't do a little of anything, no matter what it is. And I'll get to that a little bit further down my story. You know, so I went through 28 days of rehab. I got out. I put together 8 months. I didn't get a sponsor. I thought, you know, I can do this. I can just go to meetings. And, you know, I was kind of thinking of a sponsor, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But I never got a sponsor, and I relapsed. And I came back, but I didn't say anything to anyone. You know, I never admitted to anybody that I relapsed. And I can remember every time they'd call for newcomers in the meeting, I'd feel this big, you know. I would sit there and I'd think to myself, you piece of shit, you know. And then I'd start to think that you guys were on to me, you know. Like everyone knew, you know, that I didn't admit it, you know. So like 90 days later, I relapsed again, and I thought I got to do something. And I got it. My first sponsor was Joe Kay, Shane's sponsor, and I told him what was up, and he said, it's no big deal, just change your sobriety date. Now, I'm used to being out there partying and drinking and in the streets, and when you do something or you screw up, they tell you, you got to leave, you know, because that's what I was told most of my life, you know, in the bars and the people that I hung out with, the things that I was doing, you got to leave. Don't come back here again. You know, countless bars that I was thrown out of, and don't come back here again. I can remember one night in a blackout back east, I went into a convenience store down the street from my house, asked to use their telephone because I wanted to call the dope man, and they let me use the phone, and they hear me talking on the phone, and they told me, give me the phone back, and I got into it with the manager of the store, and kind of got belligerent, and I left, and a few days later, I went back in that store, and was in a blackout. I completely forgot about it, and the girl says to me, I can't believe you came back in here, and I'm like, how come? She said, you don't remember what you did in here the other night? No. She was like, I'd leave before the manager sees you. And I walked out, and it was like, what the hell did I do, you know? And somebody had told me the story later on down the road, what had happened. And you know, they're just the things that I did. You know, that crazy behavior. So I started working with Joe. I changed my sobriety date. I put 90 days together. I relapsed again. I kept wanting to work the program my way. I didn't want to work the steps the way you guys recommended working the steps. I wanted to do it my way. And I put together 15 months of sobriety. And I thought that I had it going on. I thought that I knew something about recovery. I don't need to work the steps the way they are in the big book. You know, I thought I needed this guide, this outline, because I'm going to make this complicated and hard. And I relapsed again. And, you know, I was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a Saturday night. I walked out of that meeting. I was with Luke and Pam. We went for something to eat. I went home. I was hanging with some people that I shouldn't have been hanging with. And it was midnight. And I said to this girl, can you score? And the next thing I know, I'm in Lompoc in Motel 6, and I'm partying, and it was like, you know, how the hell did I get here? You know, how did I get here? It happened that quick. You know, and I learned something from that. If you run and do the old things that you were doing before you got sober, your character defects will catch up with you, and you'll pay the price for it, you know? I learned not to do the things in sobriety that I thought that I could do, you know, and I was on a run for a couple days, and I remember Joe calling me that morning. Me, him, and Luke were supposed to go for a ride on our motorcycles, and he called me at 8 o'clock, and he said, what are you doing? I said, I went out last night. I'm in Lompoc at Motel 6, and he said, are you all right? I said, yeah. And he said, I'm going to come and get you. And I said, no. I said, I started this. I'm going to finish it. And I hung up. And he called me back. And he called and called throughout the day. And I just avoided him. And, you know, finally, several days later, I talked to Luke. And him and Luke Luke took me to my first meeting. You know, I'm forever grateful for Luke for picking me up that night and taking me back to a meeting. And I sat and cried throughout that meeting, and I thought, I'll never be able to get sober, you know. I thought, I'll never be able to get honest like you guys are honest. I'll never be able to work those steps the way you guys have worked the steps. And, you know, one day led to another, and I was at the Friday night podium meeting, and I walked out of that meeting, and me and Joe were in the parking lot talking, and I said, you know what? Fuck this place, man. Fuck these meetings. Fuck the steps. I can't do this. And he said, why don't you go home tonight and go to sleep? He said, when you wake up tomorrow morning, call me and let me know how you feel. And I did that. And I woke up the next morning and I felt completely different. And I called him up and he said, that's how it works. You just don't pick up no matter what. You know, you were a success yesterday. He said, you can be a success today. Just don't pick up. He said, why don't you try working the steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous rather than trying to use some format or do it your way or try this or try that. He said, why don't you do it the way we've done it? And I did that. You know, and it took me a year and a half to write a fourth step. I'd write a little bit. I'd wake up Saturday morning. I'd sit there. I'd write a little bit. We'd get together Sunday, and we'd talk about it. And the next week, I'd get up. I'd write a little bit. We'd sit down. We'd talk about it. And he said, there's no race to do this. You know, because the first few times I tried working the steps, Joe sponsored another guy, and it was like I was in competition with him. I'd see him in a meeting, and he'd tell me that he worked the second step, and I'd run home. I'd write some bullshit down on a piece of paper. And I'd see him at the next meeting the next day, and I said, I did my second step. And, you know, went on, and I was just writing bullshit on paper. I wasn't getting honest, you know. I could tell you guys the honest truth, but I couldn't be honest with myself, and that was the problem, you know. I just could not get honest with myself. So I continued to work the steps, and I got a year of sobriety. And just before my second birthday, I thought, am I going to be able to get 2 years? You know, because I hit that 15-month mark, and then I was into new waters, and I thought, am I going to be able to get 2 years of sobriety? And that was September of 2005. I was in a major motorcycle accident. We were on our way to Reno, and we were on Freeway 14, and we were all going excess of the speed limit. And I went down going 110 miles an hour, and I thought I was going to die. I saw the pavement coming towards me, and I said goodbye. I thought I was dead. And after that accident, there's a friend in recovery who lived in Lancaster, and he picked me up at the hospital. The only thing that happened to me was some road rash, and I dislocated a toe. And I sat in his house for a week, and we got to talk about recovery. And got to talk about how he did it. He had 10 years of sobriety at the time. And we got to share, you know, some things that you just don't get to share with someone when you sit with someone for a week straight. And I can remember, there was a guy who used to come around, Steve B., and I can remember him calling me on the phone and telling me that God wasn't finished with me yet, and that's the reason I didn't die in that accident. And for the first time, I thought to myself, wow, you know, God's working in my life, you know. Maybe there is something bigger out there than I realize, you know. There aren't many people who fall off a motorcycle at 110 miles an hour that live, you know. And I came home and you know, I didn't work for several months, and I was real busy in meetings, and I started to live the program, you know. It wasn't just acting the program, I was living the program. You know, in 2 years to 3 years, 4 to 5, 6, and just before 6 years, I almost relapsed. I got complacent in recovery. I started doing those things that I was doing when I was out there, running with people I shouldn't have run with. I started dating a girl who was smoking dope. And then my mind started telling me, well, I can smoke dope. It's no big deal. She can do it. Why can't I do it? And my head just started to unravel. And I thought to myself, I sat in a meeting in the Lion's Den, and I said, if I don't do something tonight, you're going to end up relapsing. And at the time, the meetings that I was going to, there weren't many men who were very active in sobriety. And what happened with me and Joe is, me and Joe got to be such good friends that the sponsorship was kind of pushed to the side. You know, we'd make plans to get together, and it'd be like, ah, we'll do it next week. And it just got to the point where it was a friendship more than a sponsorship. And I just wasn't doing anything in recovery. And I sat there, and the only person at that time that I could think of to sponsor me was Suzanne N. And I went up to her after the meeting, and I said, I need your help. You know, would you sponsor me? I said, I'm about ready to drink. And she said, no problem. And as I sat in that meeting, I thought to myself, what are people going to think that I'm asking a female to sponsor me? What are people going to say? You know, what are they going to say behind your back? And my next thought was, how important is it what people say when you could be dead if you relapse? And I asked Suzanne to sponsor me, and I'm forever indebted to that woman because she saved my life at 6 years. You know, she took me through the steps again, and I got to uncover some things in a fourth and a fifth step that I never did when I did it at, you know, a year and a half. You know, those insecurities that we have, the feelings of, you know, being unwanted and being unloved and thinking that I need the car or the bike or the girl to fix me, you know, to fill that hole in my gut, you know, and that's not what fixes me. You know, so I got to learn again in recovery that the only thing that fills that hole in my soul is God. You know, and the neat thing in recovery is you can find a God, whatever it may be. You know, it could be God, it could be Buddha, it could be whatever. You know, and when I came in here, they didn't tell me, you have to pick this God right here, because if you don't, you'll drink. You know, they said, find a God that works for you. Well, being born and raised Catholic, I had all this static in my head of this punishing God, and at that 6 years, I hadn't been to church and since I had relapsed, and a couple people had said to me, why don't you consider going back to church? And I thought, you know, I can't get sobriety and church to run together, and I called my mom one night, and I told her how I was feeling, and she said, why don't you go back to church? And I did. And I'll tell you, about 3 or 4 weeks after going to church, I was driving home from church one day, and I started to, and I thought to myself, I don't feel that pit in my gut, you know? I don't feel that loneliness, you know? I don't feel that unloved feeling, and that was when I got to work for Steps again, and I'll tell you, that was probably one of the hardest times of my life when I was in it, but I look back on that, and I'll tell you that was one of the greatest times of my life, you know? I hear people say in recovery that God's testing them, and I don't believe that He tests us, you know? I believe God allows us to go through struggles to seek Him, and they're the things that I found in my recovery that I struggle through, that God allows me to go through, because then I seek Him, and when I seek Him, I get closer to the fellowship, and I get to work with people, and I get to help people. Because my selfishness and self-centeredness tells me that I don't need to help you, you know? There's someone else who can help them. I got something to do tonight. I don't want to go to that meeting. Oh, not him again. Oh, she's sharing again. God, the same thing, you know, that insanity, you know, that runs through our minds. And, you know, I hit 10 years of sobriety, and I started a new job last July, and I started to get complacent in sobriety again. You know, my job got pretty busy, and I would get home from work at night, and I don't want to go to a meeting, I'm tired, and I started to get crazy again, you know, and once again I sat in that Tuesday night meeting and I said to myself, if you don't do something tonight, you're going to relapse. And I wasn't calling my sponsor, you know, I barely go into a meeting a week, and, you know, and I changed sponsors. Have I done much with that sponsor since I've asked them to sponsor me? No, but I took an action. And I've learned in recovery that you have to take an action to get the feelings, you know. There's still, you know, meetings that I go to during the week. I get home from work and I don't feel like going, but I make myself. You know, I was taught early on in sobriety, you know, you take the body and the feelings will follow, you know. Just do it, just do it, just do it. You know, and then after you get there, you feel better. You know, another thing that I found in recovery is the things that I hate to do, I get the most out of. I don't know how that works, why that works. It could be in sobriety, it could be outside of sobriety, it could be at work, it could be wherever. You know, it's leading up to something and it's like, I don't want to do that. Why do I got to do that? Why'd they ask me to do that? And then I do it and it's like, man, I'm glad I did that. You know, our thinking is so far out as alcoholics. And one thing I learned very early in sobriety from Luke and Pam was we're bodily and mentally different from our fellows. That was ingrained in me very, very early in sobriety. You know, everything that I do is different from the normal person. At that six-year mark, when I almost relapsed, and I started to get my head on straight and work the steps, I started to date a girl, and we started to become close. And in June of 2012, I got married, which is something I never thought I would do. Revolted at the thought of getting married. You know, I wanted to run and play the game and be caught up in the lifestyle, and God blessed me with a wife. You know, I never ever thought that I'd be married. And you know, like Shane mentioned, you know, I'm blessed to have a wife today, someone that I'm accountable to, you know, someone who loves me, you know, because I didn't think that was possible when I was out there drinking and using. You know, life today is just absolutely incredible. You know, don't get me wrong, there's some days that I think to myself, what the hell did I get myself into? But my life's incredible. You know, it's absolutely incredible. When I first moved to California, I wanted in the worst way to become manager of the department that I work in the dealership. And I tried and I kicked and I screamed and I wanted to be the manager. I wanted to be the boss. I wanted to be in charge. And I never had the opportunity for that. And in March, a dealership that I worked for and had left, they called me and they asked me to come back and they offered me the manager's position. And I'll tell you something, I don't say that to brag. I owe that all to Alcoholics Anonymous because you guys have taught me how to live. You guys have taught me how to work with other people. You guys have taught me patience and tolerance and how to deal with others. And I'm in that job now for almost 4 months, and there's days that I do my job and I think to myself, I could not do this job if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? Because like Shane said, those things come up and you work with others and my first response is, I want to bark at them. I want to yell at them. Are you stupid? The hell are you thinking? But you guys have taught me different, that I don't have to talk to other people like that, you know? I can go to someone in a calm way and ask them, what happened? You know, how did we end up in this situation? What can you and I do to get ourselves out of this situation? How can we fix this? You know, you guys have taught me that it's we and it's not I. You know, we can do this together. You know, what do we have to do? You know, Shane thanked me for asking him to speak, and as he said that to me, I thought to myself, you don't have to thank me, man, because we get to do this together tonight. You know, it's not just I coming down here to speak, it's we, you know? And that's what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there's nothing that I ever have to do alone, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, I have a problem today, I can call someone up and I can let them know what's happening, you know? And I'm just grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for everything that it's given me. I'm grateful for the friends that it's given me, the things that I've... When I was drinking and using, I used to sit and think and wish about things that I'd like to do. And I'll tell you, 90% of the things that I've wanted to do in life, I've got to do in the past 10 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I was in high school, I wanted in the worst way to buy a Harley Davidson. Worst way I wanted a Harley. I got so screwed up in my addiction that I just totally lost sight of that. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and my sponsor rides a Harley Davidson, his friend rides a Harley Davidson, and it was like, wow, I might be able to buy a bike now. And in 10 years of recovery, I've ridden the state of California, I've ridden to Oregon, I've ridden all over the place, you know, logged over 100,000 miles on a bike. Would I have been able to have done that if I wasn't sober? Hell no. You know, I'd still be locked up in the bathroom thinking about it, you know, worrying someone's coming to get me, you know, that crazy lifestyle that we lived. And I don't have to do that today. You know, I don't have much else to share, you know, except if you're new tonight and you're wondering how to stay sober, or you're wondering what to do next, just do the next thing in front of you, you know, whatever it may be. Just don't pick up a drink no matter what, you know. And if you're coming back off a relapse, if you've been here before, welcome back. That's what they told me. Don't listen to what your head says. You're not a piece of shit, you know. You're just another alcoholic trying to get a day of sobriety. That's all that I have. Thank you.
Did you get your money's worth? That was great. Let's give Michael another hand.